Appeals and Veterans Claims now in session. The Honorable Lawrence B. Hague presiding. All those who have business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning, everyone. We're here today to hear the case of Cook versus McDonald. The docket number of this case is 150873. Who will speak for Mr. Cook? Thank you. And who will speak for the secretary?
Andy Kirshner, Your Honor, also appearing from Washington.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Carpenter, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal. You may begin.
May it please the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Warren Cook. The issue that I will address this morning is whether the provisions of 38 CFR section 20.700 paren small a preclude the board from affording a veteran a second hearing following remand from this court. I will not be addressing the other three issues that were on the briefs. Those matters should be considered by the court to be submitted on the briefs. Your Honors, we believe that the unambiguous language of 38 U.S.C. section...
Go on 1 second.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
The unambiguous language of 38 U.S.C. section 7107B mandates that the board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for a hearing. The decision of the board on the appeal in this matter violated that clear and unambiguous mandate. The VA relies upon a misinterpretation of the provisions of section 20.700 parens small a, that there is no basis in a statute or a regulation directing that the claimant must be provided more than one hearing on request. To the extent of their phraseology, they are correct. There is no direct statement that more than one hearing will be provided upon request. However, the clear language of 7107B indicates that the board shall only decide a matter on any appeal after having afforded the appellant an opportunity for a hearing. That did not happen here. What happened in this case was that the original decision for which Mr. Cook was afforded a hearing was vacated and set aside by this court. That decision then no longer was the decision of the board, and as a result of this court's order, this court directed that the board make a new decision. In accordance with the plain language of 7107B, he should have been afforded upon his request, and he made two requests in writing to the VA and to the board, requesting that he be entitled to that he be afforded a hearing in order to present additional evidence. Clearly, when this court vacates a decision and orders a new decision to be made by the board, there is absolutely no language within the plain language of 20.700A which precludes affording the veteran such a hearing.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
As I understand the facts, and please correct me if I don't have them right, Mr. Cook had a board hearing in 2012 at which he testified.
That is correct.
And the board remanded it for additional development. Then the RO issued a supplemental statement of the case, and Mr. Cook asked for an additional board hearing when it went back to the board. That resulted in the board uh, issuing a decision but failed to acknowledge the request for the hearing and just merely issued the decision.
Correct.
The next thing that happens is a joint motion for remand. And this is where my question lies. There was no mention of the failure to grant a second hearing in the joint motion for remand. But clearly, the board failed to grant the request for the second hearing. So, if that was the case, and Mr. Cook was represented, and that error existed in the record at that time, why does that not preclude Mr. Cook from raising that issue in this board hearing that we're reviewing today?
Because he expressly made two requests following this court's remand, and those requests were rejected by the board, and in fact the board indicated in its decision that they would not afford.
But isn't that sandbagging? For example, if he would have gotten a favorable decision, then it would have been over. But he didn't get a favorable decision and failed to raise the issue that was extant in the record at the time, and therefore he preserves, puts in his pocket or his knapsack, this issue about failing to get a hearing with and raises it again. Isn't that unnecessary litigation?
No, Your Honor, and in fact, these are two separate requests for hearing, and a hearing that preceded the decision that was vacated, and I believe that's the factual basis that you're discussing. There is a separate factual basis.
I understand, 2014
request. For a request for another hearing as the matter went back after another statement of the case, a supplemental statement of the case, by the VA for a return hearing before the board. The issue that was raised by Mr. Cook is not in relationship to the first scenario or set of facts, if you will, but in relationship to the second. Although we believe that that was a clear error of law, that error of law was not raised by Mr. Cook in this briefing, nor was it raised a second time, as you suggest, after having been denied it again. They were simply focused on, we're now back with, in our view, a clean slate, and he should have been afforded an opportunity upon his request, and that in accordance with both the statute and the regulation, he should have been afforded a hearing. And the failure to afford that hearing is a clear error of law.
Okay. Now, you talk about a conflict in your supplemental between the 3.103B language that you can have a hearing at any time and the 20.700A. 20.700A uses a hearing, and you talk about that conflict and you basically say that 3.103 should apply. Now, what's your rationale for indicating that 3.103 applies to board hearings?
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor, if we made the statement that affirmatively, I'm not sure that that was our intent. Our intent was is to demonstrate that that's consistent with the regulatory structure, that the intent of the VA is to provide a hearing at any time, as demonstrated by the process that they use before the agency. In this context, we're talking under 20.700A for the request for a hearing before the board, and that there's nothing in the plain language of the regulation that imposes a preclusion, that takes away the right to have a second hearing. The VA relies exclusively upon the use of the Article A, and that somehow, based upon the use of the Article A, that imposes a limitation. It simply does not. You cannot read that, particularly in context with the other provisions of the regulation,
Well, is there any limitation? If you're saying that we should draw upon 3.103 to kind of like, you know, cast its light on 20.700 and kind of guide the way, is there any limitation in 20.700? I mean, could a veteran have two hearings on the same go-round up at the board?
I believe that there is nothing in the regulation that would prohibit that. However, I believe the issue is not whether is an entitlement to multiple opportunities for a hearing, but specifically in the context of the facts of this case, whether or not when you get a vacation of the board decision that you have appealed and you are back before the board on remand, are you entitled to another hearing? Just as he was entitled, in our view, to another hearing in the factual scenario that Judge Hagel focused on in the first instance when his case was remanded by the board and then sent back to the board for a second time.
I understand what you're trying to do, arguing that whenever it's vacated, you know, it goes back, the veteran gets a hearing, an opportunity to have a hearing. And, of course, if the veteran doesn't want to delay matters by not having that, that would be fine. But that would seemingly leave open the door for a veteran. You know, we're wiping away limitations as far as numbers of hearings.
Well, except, Your Honor, that and the supplemental authority that we presented just yesterday.
What supplemental authority?
We submitted to the court the here it is. The provisions of three VA regulations, one of which is 20.1507B1. And 20.1507B1 has a...
Excuse me, under what authority did you submit that?
This court's rule for the submission.
Which is? Which rule?
30B.
All right. And what does 30B say? What limitations does it have on it?
That it should be relevant to these proceedings.
Except for good cause, it must be submitted within or before 7 days of the oral argument. It may not be submitted within 7 days of the oral argument.
So that's my error, Your Honor. Okay.
Well, if you can give us good cause, then we may consider it. But,
I believe that the good cause is that...
When you submit in writing good cause, then we will review that and determine if we should consider it. And I suggest you do that very quickly.
I will.
Thank you.
But should I proceed with responding to the question then? Not that portion of my response. But then to respond to your question, I believe that there is clear evidence that the VA knows how to write a regulation that will impose limitations, and that this court should not be concerned with the VA's regulatory writing, but what the written regulations say, or in this case, do not say. And this regulation does not impose a preclusion. And to the extent that it can be interpreted to be unlimited, I believe that that's a correct interpretation as written. If the VA wishes to impose limitations, I believe that they know how to write a regulation that does that. And that all this court should be concerned about is whether or not Mr. Cook, in this case, when he made his multiple requests for a hearing before the board, following remand from this court, the board was correct or incorrect as a matter of law. The board justified it based upon discretion that I do not find in the plain language of the regulation, based upon their determination that such a hearing was not necessary. There's nothing in the statute or in the regulation that gives them that discretion. The condition for a hearing is to request it and to indicate that they will appear in person. And in both of the requests that were made by Mr. Cook, he did that. Therefore, he complied with his obligation under the regulation, and the board committed a clear error of law in this case when they denied him a hearing and an opportunity to submit evidence. There's one other point that I wanted to make, Your Honor, in terms of the notion of this coming back just on remand. One of the things that is in nearly every remand order, as well as joint remand, is the opportunity for the veteran to submit additional evidence. It would be incongruous to suggest that the veteran can submit additional evidence, but would be denied the opportunity to present that evidence in a hearing. The clear intent of 7107B is that the veteran be entitled to a hearing, and that the board will not make a decision on any appeal until after the appellant has been afforded that opportunity for a hearing.
And why isn't the Secretary's interpretation as to the meaning of a hearing or a hearing entitled to deference?
Well, for two reasons, Your Honor. First, there is no statute that they are interpreting. There is no statute that indicates that a limitation needs to be placed upon that, and that any ambiguity, the only authority that they have to write a regulation is if there is ambiguity in that regulation in order to get deference from this court. There is no statute that they have cited that indicates that there is any ambiguity that would require a regulation that be written to somehow impose limitations. And that clearly cannot be the plain meaning of this regulation. All this regulation says...
I can't remember whether the Secretary cited to 7107B, but B does say the board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for a hearing.
That's correct. And the use...
And given that we're arguing about that term, that could be seen as a somewhat ambiguous term.
And I'm suggesting that it isn't, because the operative phrase in that statute is the board shall decide any appeal only after affording the veteran an opportunity for a hearing. To read into that a limitation, the limitation that is plain on its face is that there will not be a decision without having afforded the veteran an opportunity. Just as we afford the veteran an opportunity to submit evidence, we afford the veteran an opportunity for a hearing. And to read this any other way is in conflict with this court's jurisprudence as well as the plain meaning of the statute.
Before you, one of your other arguments, as I recall, was that the court's vacation of the its prior decision, in essence, left the claim open. In other words, there was no board decision.
That's correct. It creates a clean slate because the legal effect.
I understand. So if that's the case, and Mr. Cook already had a hearing, then didn't Mr. Cook satisfy? Didn't the VA satisfy its obligation?
No, Your Honor, because he didn't have a hearing before the decision made by the board. The decision made by the board was the decision that he appealed. Before that decision was made, he made two efforts in writing to...
No, I understand that, but didn't he get his hearing, assuming that your argument before was correct? In other words, he got his hearing. So, in other words, let's assume that, following on Judge Bartley's question, let's assume that Mr. Cook had three issues that the board didn't consider. And so he comes to the board, makes oral argument, as in your scenario he is permitted to do, and argues one of those, and sits back and says, let's see if they buy that one. And the board doesn't buy it. And so then he asks for another hearing and says, okay, here's argument number two. And they don't buy that. So he asks for another hearing. So is there What's to prohibit that scenario?
Well, I would suppose a final decision. If after presenting each of those, the board made a final decision.
Well, let's say he appeals to the court and the court demands it.
Yes. Well, then I believe that he is entitled to start with a clean slate and go back and in his second hearing have the opportunity to present
issue number two,
or all three issues. Absolutely, Your Honor. Although I do not believe that it's fair to characterize it as he kept it in his pocket, although I think it is fair to say that strategically a judgment could have been made by he and his representative that issue one was the stronger issue and that they would let stand those other issues, just as in this case, Your Honor, with the written arguments
but
that were made in the briefs.
Perhaps Mr. Cook wouldn't think about it himself, but let's say he was represented by a very clever lawyer. Might that not be something that lawyer might do, saying, hey, I got three shots at this instead of one?
No, Your Honor, because that is not a reasonable utilization of that attorney's time.
Wait a minute, the attorney gets paid on a remand. And then the attorney gets paid again when the attorney goes back to the board, depending on the fee agreement.
Your Honor, that implies an agenda on the part of counsel.
I'm not implying anything. All I'm saying is you say it would not be a good use of the attorney's time.
It might be
a good use of the attorney's time. I'm not saying whether it's ethical or not. That's a whole other issue.
I think it would be irresponsible for an attorney to do that. Now, that does not mean that there are not issues that either you do not see the significance of or there is a change in the evidence. And I think
that's a different story.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think the focus here should be on the nature of the representation or request made by Mr. Cook. He asked for the hearing in order to submit additional evidence.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to. I'm taking up the time.
What evidence?
Expired.
What evidence was he going to submit? And did he submit it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I do not know, and I believe he submitted it, but I do not know what that evidence was. It's simply mentioned in his written request. So I presume once denied the hearing, he went ahead and submitted the evidence because there's no bar under this court's case law to the submission of the evidence, and he was deprived the opportunity of hearing, which is why we're here. Unless you have another question.
Well, I was going to ask the same question Judge Peach did, and I happen to know that one of the bits of evidence that counsel proffered in his brief, I believe, was just letting he wanted to let the board know that indeed there were Social Security records, when earlier the VA had been informed that there weren't additional Social Security records, and he was saying they were available at, I think, National Archives. And so taking off on Judge Peach's question, that's the kind of thing that seemingly could have just been sent in. You know, you could send in a letter saying, like, hey, there are Social Security records, here's where they are. And given the number of requests for board hearings that the board receives, and the Secretary talked about this in his response, I believe, is it reasonable that we would interpret that a veteran could request a hearing just to say something in person that could have been submitted in writing?
Well, to be perfectly candid with you, Your Honor, I'm not sure I see any reason to have a personal hearing other than to do that. It is perfectly possible, and it is at least the practice that I do, to submit testimony under oath by way of affidavit so that the whole process is shortened in time. But we're talking here about a right to a hearing. And there isn't any question that the title of this subsection of this regulation says a right to a hearing. And I believe that this court cannot interpret that right as anything other than an absolute right upon request.
I'm not sure I understood what you said a moment ago. Were you saying that you, in your practice, not that it's relevant, but just you,
yes.
That this is what you were saying, that you would request a hearing to have the appellant testify? Oh, you wouldn't?
No,
because
I would
it would
not.
Be time-consuming. Because yes, you would have to wait for the hearing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And frankly, that's based upon my experience in doing hearings both at the administrative level and at the board level, at the agency level, I should say.
But what you're saying is that if an attorney chose to request a hearing to do exactly that, to submit something that could have been submitted in one sentence via mail or email or however communication is done nowadays between VA and the veteran, that would be okay.
I think it's mandated by both the statute and the regulation, Your Honor. And that the key here is that it is not the attorney's decision, it is the veteran's decision. And if the veteran wants a hearing, then the veteran ought to have the opportunity to come in and testify before the person that's going to make that decision. That's the nature of the right to the hearing, and that's the constitutional implication of whether or not you do or do not have a right under this regulation as opposed to under the Constitution to come in and offer that, even if it may be more time-consuming and create more delay. Unless there's further questions from the panel.
How many hearings has this appellant had combination-wise before the RO and the board?
I'm not sure before the RO, Your Honor. I am reasonably certain that he's only had one hearing, and that was the original hearing that was described by Judge Hagel in his recitation.
And how many times has it been up to the RO?
Remanded? You mean up to the board?
No, the RO, down to the RO, and then back to the board.
I believe it has been back to the RO three different times, but it could be just two. I know it went back once in the initial scenario after the board remanded it, and then it went to the board for a final decision, and then it came back after that final decision to this court and went back again for a second supplemental statement.
And nowhere in those hearings he submitted any additional evidence. If the evidence in question was the Social Security records, in those five levels, he's never done any?
He's never submitted anything
extra?
I apologize. I'm not familiar enough with the record to be able to confirm that. But I do not believe that the issue is submission of evidence here. The issue is the right to a hearing.
No, I understand.
And whether or not the use of the Article A to a hearing, either in the statute or in the regulation, creates some sort of implicit limitation to a single hearing.
Well, does the secretary have any legitimacy to the argument that he makes about what was the prejudice for not having, or where he was not granted a hearing, or that the decision was made without a hearing? What was the prejudice?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that it is prejudicial per se that when the statute and the regulation afford a right, and that right is denied arbitrarily, in this case because the veterans law judge said he didn't deem it necessary, that is per se prejudicial to the veteran. That the lack of an opportunity, as I was just discussing with Judge Bartley, if you have a right in statute and a right in regulation to have a hearing and you want it, no matter how much longer that will delay the disposition of your appeal, then you have an absolute right to that hearing, and the denial of that hearing is prejudicial as a matter of law.
Thank you.
Nothing else.
Thank you.
Mr. Kirshner.
May it please the Court, Nathan Kirshner representing Secretary of Veteran Affairs. With me at the Council table is Deputy Chief Counsel Carolyn Washington. Your Honors, this is a case about limited or unlimited hearings before the Board upon a simple request. Nothing in the statute or the regulation mandates that more than one hearing must be provided before the Board upon request. All second hearings are conditional in some manner or another. Beginning with the statute that was just spoken above during Appellant's argument, 7107B, it uses the singular A. Moving on through the regulations, 3.103C1 uses the singular A. 20.700 sub A uses the singular A. On and on and on through the regulations.
So what authority do you have that says A means only singular?
Well, Your Honor, as was noted in our supplemental briefing, we submitted the dictionary definition of A.
Well, what about Black's Law Dictionary? What about case law? What about words and phrases?
I looked in my copy of Black's Chief Judge, and I didn't see a definition of A there. I recognize.
So you decided to pick the Webster's, right?
It was the dictionary I had.
But no case law?
Your Honor, I was going to get to that in a second. I note that Appellant referred to Sersley in his response to our supplemental memorandum.
Federal Circuit.
No, okay. In that case, the Federal Circuit found that A could have a singular or a plural meaning, but they looked at the context of the statute to find that there.
So A, if you're relying just on A, it could have more than one meaning.
It could have more than one meaning.
And that's what the Federal Circuit said, as long as we look at the context of everything.
Correct, as long as you look at the context. And then certainly the context was important because that dealt with the right to a clothing allowance. And the right to a clothing allowance, the Federal Circuit, on the newest version of the regulation that they discussed, was based upon the right to a clothing allowance per piece of appliance or prosthetic appliance that may damage clothing. So for each one of the prosthetics you have, you may be entitled to a clothing allowance, depending on the facts. The previous construction of the statute provided for a singular clothing allowance, and I believe it used a plural for the number of appliances. So in that instance, the Federal Circuit found under the construction of the statute, the veteran would have been permissible for the veteran to only be entitled to one clothing allowance, regardless of the number of prosthetic appliances. So here, the Secretary thinks, based on the context of the statute and also the regulations as they go through, it's pretty clear that the right to a hearing, especially a second hearing, is conditional upon the requirements in various regulations. And the most important one, I think, for this case is 20.1304B, which is the right to a hearing upon a showing of good cause. Appellant has already had his hearing, and under 20.1304A, you get a right to a hearing as long as that is submitted within the 90-day period following certification to the board. That has happened here. Appellant has had that hearing. After that happens, after the 90-day period, after it's been certified to the board, further requests for hearings are conditional upon good cause. And that's really what this case turns upon, because Appellant did submit two requests for hearings. There was one in 2013, or after his hearing, he submitted two subsequent requests for hearings. First one was in November 2013. That went to the board, which denied the claim, and that case came up here. Actually, in that
and,
board,
and the board ignored the request.
Actually, Your Honor, at record of 34, they acknowledged the request and denied it.
No, well, that's the second one. The first
no,
one.
No, and in the first one, Your Honor, at record of 34, I believe. Record 34, the board notes the veteran requested a hearing in November 2013 so he could present further evidence. However, he was already afforded a board hearing in June 2012. He also presented testimony before the RO in September 2007. So transcripts have been associated with the record as such for further hearings.
Is that the first board decision or the second? Is that the 2014 or the 2000?
That's the 2014.
Yeah,
2014.
Yes.
But in the, hang on a second here. Let me look at my notes here. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine, Chief.
Well, if I could continue
yes, sir.
With that line of questioning, the board did dispense with a 2013 request for a hearing, I think it was 2013, in the 2014 decision, which was R 37, as you just said. But then when that board denial was appealed to the Veterans Court and was remanded, the attorney made another request at R 17. And that was, and said, I have further evidence. I will be advised we will be presenting additional evidence in the form of Mr. Cook's testimony at the hearing.
If I might add, he also said, or she also said, if you had any questions about that or require additional information, please contact my office.
And then there was no response to that notification that there was additional evidence to be submitted until the board decision issued, and in the board decision it was dealt with. So does that, I think that the chief was trying to say, like, he didn't get any notice that he wouldn't be able to submit that evidence, and then there was just issuance of the board decision.
Well, Your Honor, the regulations generally provide that the board may rule on motions. 19.3, I believe, is the regulation for that. And this could be considered a motion, I guess, for a new hearing. If I go back to what I was talking about before with 20.13 or 4B, a hearing will be granted based upon if good cause is shown upon motion, essentially. And that regulation lists the various examples of good cause, but I think it also says it's not limited to those examples. Good cause just must be shown. So at this point, because Appellant has already had his hearing, because it is past the 90-day time period from certification of the appeal, any request for another hearing has to show good cause pursuant to 20.1304B. And in fact, I just want to note that the Bryant case in the footnote 1 notes that 20.1304B lays out the procedures for obtaining a hearing at the board. So the question is, you know, essentially, Appellant had a motion that he filed for a hearing. The board denied that hearing. The request that he submitted for a hearing in 2014, frankly, it did not show good cause. Your Honor brought up the issue of having some Social Security records or the VA having gotten the issue of whether there were Social Security records wrong, getting incorrect information from the Social Security Administration. If that kind of thing would have been put into the motion, you have wrong evidence, further evidence in the terms of the form of the Social Security Administration, something like that, some kind of cause, I think that the board member would have been much more likely to grant it. But again, that's at their discretion, and they ruled on that motion in the decision, which is permissible under 19.3.
Well, if we could just go back for a minute to your citation of 20.1304B, my understanding of that reg is that A says that you have a particular period of time, 90 days, to request a hearing once the case is certified to the board. And then are you suggesting that B addresses if you want an additional hearing after having already had one? Because my interpretation of B is that if you make a request for a hearing outside of that 90-day period after certification, you would need to show good cause. Were you suggesting, it sounded like you were suggesting that that B could be used to request an additional hearing even though you've already had one?
I think that's Pardon me, Your Honor, please. I think that's a fair interpretation. I think B is not only for what's supposed to happen after the 90-day period, but if you look at the facts of this case, and I would guess the facts of a number of cases, oftentimes if the veteran has a hearing, you know, by the time they would request a second hearing, it would be outside of that 90-day period by operation of the administrative process and generally how long things take. So I think at any time after that 90-day period, they could submit a second request for a hearing based upon good cause on motion, and the board member could rule on it, and I think essentially that's what happened here, Your Honor.
The board could rule on it in its decision.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what 19.3
I believe so,
says.
Your Honor. I don't believe, the Secretary doesn't believe or isn't aware at this point of any regulation that dictates some kind of separate notice on that motion. I think the 19.3 is the regulation, and it allows them to just rule on a motion in the decision.
Well, it seems quite odd to me that if a veteran, you know, disregarding the evidence that was to be submitted here, because counsel wasn't aware of it, and I just had this vague memory of what was to be submitted. But putting aside the facts of this case, if a veteran actually, you know, has something to transmit to the board prior to the board decision, well within the 90 days, forget the certification, but anyway, has something to transmit via testimony to the board and lets the board know that, and are you saying that there doesn't need to be any separate notice to the veteran that he or she's not going to get that opportunity, and then in the board decision they can just dispense with it however they like?
Outside of the 90 days or within the 90 days, Your Honor? I think, as I stated, Your Honor.
Well, within the 90 days. I mean, this was, if 20.1304 applied here, which it doesn't seem to, because at least A doesn't apply, because there was no certification here. This was a remand from the Veterans Court. But I believe that the veteran quite promptly after the remand said, I want this hearing. I have additional evidence. It just seems kind of not very veteran-friendly to not give any response, even to say, I'm sorry, you already had your hearing, we're not going to give you another one, period. You know, here it was just dispensed with in the board decision.
It was dispensed with in the board's decision, Your Honor, but again, that's permissible, I believe, the Secretary believes, based upon the regulation. The Secretary is not currently aware of any other regulation that would provide for separate notice of that denial. In terms of, that's the response, Your Honor.
Well, if what you say is correct, then when the board made the decision that's on appeal, that's on appeal now, where it stated up front that they note the requests for hearing, and the board determined it was unnecessary. Why didn't the board tell us why it was unnecessary, if you have all this good cause criteria?
The Secretary doesn't know why the board didn't write that, Your Honor. Imprecise drafting, unfortunately, perhaps. But the regulation, nevertheless, states that, you know, for 20.1304B purposes, good cause must be shown, and the board, at least implicitly, appears to have found it wasn't, and so it didn't grant the hearing. And again, this is a case where this appellant has been represented by the same counsel since 2007, when a Form 9 was filed. I noticed that current counsel was of record as representing the veteran. They're obviously very familiar with the case. If they had known that there were purported Social Security records or an error, it does beg the question, what appellant's counsel said he does in his own practice, why they didn't submit the records or submit something in writing instead of coming back after a remand now and saying, we have a constitutional problem and a statutory regulatory problem. But I think the regulations are pretty clear, Your Honor.
If we could just go back to the regulation that you were citing, that the board member can dispense with a motion in the board decision. Could you just, I'm looking at 19, did you say 19.3?
Yes.
And is that A?
Let me see. Yes, Your Honor. It's the provision of 19.3A, the chairman may assign a proceeding instituted before the board, including any motion, to an individual member or to a panel of three or more members for adjudication or other appropriate action. The chairman may participate in a proceeding assigned to a panel of members. In our consultation with the board, Your Honor, the board informed us that based upon 19.3, that they rule upon motions.
What if Mr. Cook, during the 90-day period, submitted to the board, let's say, a report of examination, medical exam, that supported his position that there was a nexus between his back situation and service? What would the board do then? Would they accept the evidence and consider it?
If within the 90-day period,
yes.
Your Honor? Yes, I believe they would accept the evidence and consider it.
And why is that? Why would they accept it?
Pardon me, Your Honor, that wasn't something I went down terribly deeply in my research for, but I believe it's part of their standard procedure before the issuance of, it would be an SSOC or something, I think, that would come afterwards.
I'm sorry, could you?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I believe it would be an SSOC or something that would come after that. I think it's part of the board's procedure to look at that evidence.
Well, and that, I guess, would be because that's evidence that the board can consider.
Correct, Your Honor.
Why isn't testimony evidence? Why couldn't a veteran say, I've got this medical record, and let me tell you how I got it, and this is what the doctor said. And by the way, I've got these records that I sent to Social Security to support this, and this is when I submitted them, and to complete the story. Why isn't that testimony the same as evidence? Just one is in and may be incomplete given in and of itself without some explanation. Why is there a difference?
I'm not sure that there is a difference, Your Honor, in terms of testimony versus evidence. I think testimony certainly could
Well, is it testimony evidence? That's my question.
Yes, Your Honor. The Secretary does believe testimony could be considered evidence, but the question is good cause.
Is testimony, or isn't it, evidence? If you were to open your McCormick's on evidence, would they say testimony is evidence to be considered? If you were in a trial court and somebody got on the stand and testified, would you say that was evidence?
Your Honor, due respect, counsel hasn't dealt with those rules of evidence in some years, and it slips my mind at the moment, but if you want further research or briefing, I'll provide it.
Come on. That's a nice answer, but you cannot tell me that you don't know whether testimony is evidence or not. Why would a trial court, for example, allow witness after witness after witness to get on the stand and testify? What, just so they could be entertained?
Okay, Your Honor. Testimony is evidence.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief Judge.
That's your statement. You're not just agreeing with me like my son might do.
Well, Your Honor, I'm counsel's flattered by the comparison, but But frankly, I think the answer that you liked before and referred to as nice was the correct answer from my point of view.
Are you arguing, is the Secretary arguing, that your interpretation of the regulation or statute is entitled to deference?
Yes, insofar as the court may consider that it's not clear on its face, but the Secretary believes the use of the singular A, especially given the context, makes it clear on its face. So we first believe it's clear on its face, and second, we believe the interpretations of the statute as put forth in the regulation and then of the regulations themselves are all entitled to deference here.
So can you be more specific? Chevron deference?
Chevron deference would be how the regulations interpret the statute, and we think that they satisfy those criteria. Should the court find that the statute is not clear on its face, again, the Secretary believes that the statute is clear on its face and that A is singular. But should the court not agree with that, we would then move on to the second step of the Chevron deference issue, where the court would defer the agency's interpretation and regulation if it was based on a permissible construction of the statute and if the statute was ambiguous or left a gap to fill. And I think that certainly these regulations are based on a permissible construction of the statute. I mean, I think if the court were to get to the point where they're looking at whether these regulations are permissible for Chevron, they're looking at throwing out all of the regulations relating to BVA hearings and the right to a hearing. And I think that the hearing structure, such as it is, the setup of the regulations, is far too well put together and far too well reasoned to allow that. And that's the second part of the Chevron deference. It's essentially a reasonable interpretation and represents the considered view of the agency. These regulations have been around a very long time. Some of them they changed around the time of judicial review. Specifically, I think in 1994, the 90-day period was added relating to 20.1304 and all of that. But the board has been conducting hearings for a very long time. And throughout the process, a lot of these have been subject to notice and comment, and they're well-reasoned.
Yeah, so over that period of time, was there any, like, chairman's memo about the ability of a veteran as of right to get a second hearing in a board proceeding?
Not that the Secretary is aware of, Your Honor, but the regulatory history, again, kind of points to it. Back in 1989 and 1990, when the 20.1304A and B were proposed, 20.1304A, it was in 89 that there was a proposal to limit the time on inter alia requesting a hearing. And that's at 54 Federal Register 28445-47. The next year, the final rule came out at 55 Federal Register 20144-50, and that's from May 15, 1990. And that went through all the comment that happened, and it discussed issues of due process, balancing, and good cause at length. Those things all were discussed quite a lot. There was another amendment in 2002 at 67 Federal Register 3099 to 3106 from January 23rd, 2002. And there, I believe one of the commenters brought up the idea of a right to a new hearing when the board was considering new evidence.
Wait a minute.
Yes,
sir.
You
believe or it was?
Oh, it was. Okay. Pardon me, Your Honor. It was brought up that one of the commenters considered had an issue with the right to a new hearing when the board is considering new evidence. And the agency found that the due process provisions, or due process was adequately protected by the good cause provisions of 20.1304B, and that's at Federal Register at 3101, the specific point site for that. So these issues were considered as the agency brought out its regulations, promulgated its regulations, and I think really the good cause exception, or the good cause exception in 20.1304B, is really sort of the catch-all for all of this. This is where if a veteran wants another hearing after the 90 days, if they want their first hearing after the 90 days, 20.1304B, put in a motion alleging good cause or demonstrating good cause, and the board member at their discretion will grant the motion. And again, that you know, kind of comes again from the history of the board as an appellate body. You know, it, before the judicial review was implemented, it was the final arbiter, and so it you know, had resource limitations as it does now, and could limit second hearings.
Yeah, counsel, I'd like to explore your argument that you mentioned initially that this is a case of limited or unlimited hearings. Which one will it be?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're on the limited side, and the appellant is on the unlimited side, apparently, and that the appellant's interpretation of that would lead to, as you say, some absurd results. And to bolster your argument, you submitted with your supplemental brief a declaration of Mr. David Spickler, who's the deputy vice chairman of the board. And in that affidavit or declaration, he states that the board currently has over 67,500 pending hearing requests. And that there are 75 full-time veterans law judges to handle it, and that based on his review of the board hearing statistics from the past three fiscal years, the board holds between 10,500 to 12,500 hearings in each year. Now, the question I have is, of the currently 67,500 pending hearing requests, those are just hearing requests, or are those appeals?
Those are requests for hearings before the board, which only considers appellate hearing requests.
Okay, and so that means that there are more than 67,500 cases, appeals pending before the board.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and these 67,500 pending hearing requests, do you know, and you may not know, are they appeals that are landed at the board for the first time?
The Secretary does not know that, Your Honor, and also we spoke with the board yesterday, and the number is now 71,404 hearing requests.
But we don't know whether those hearing requests included remands?
We don't know, Your Honor. Okay. They don't track
but
that.
But maybe they might?
We don't know, Your Honor.
And how long, what's the average number of days or hours a hearing takes on average? A day, 2 days, 2 hours?
Counsel doesn't know, Your Honor. Okay. I could attempt to provide numbers later.
So you have how many now, you said?
71,404.
Requests for hearings.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, there is a regulation currently in existence that the chief and appellant's counsel had referred to, had undergone some discussion a few minutes ago, and that was the regulation 20.1507B1. Now, it's certainly possible that if appellant submits good cause, we may entertain that reg. He got us the supplemental authority a little bit late. That regulation implies that under the current general procedures for hearings before the board, not under the expedited claims adjudication process, but under the regular process, that more than one hearing would be allowed.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. And we submitted in our supplemental memo, a number of instances where a second hearing would be allowed. We're not saying a second hearing is permitted. We're saying a second hearing is allowed under 20.13 of 4B when there's a showing of good cause, under 20.717 when the record is lost or destroyed. And there are a few other examples in the regulations themselves where it talks about provision of another hearing. I think with regard to 20.1507 and the program that it exists under, which really isn't relevant to this case, if you look at the construction of that regulation itself, let's see here. So 20.1507B before the board. Upon request, a participant is entitled to appear before the board as provided in sections 20.700 through 717 and 20.1304, subject to the following limitations. So already under 20.1507B, you are considering all of the regulations that already exist, including good cause, a new hearing when the transcript is lost or damaged. And then it adds an additional limitation. That additional limitation is only one hearing before the board will be conducted. So that, from that regulatory construction, would seem to sort of vitiate the rights to those second hearings that are provided for in the current regulations through good cause motions and things like that. It would curtail that to say, because of this expedited adjudication program, that appellant would only get one hearing, regardless of these other ways that currently exist in the regulations to get another hearing, which in this case, appellant hasn't demonstrated because he hasn't shown good cause.
Okay, well, I was hoping to avoid this, but I don't think that we can. Can you open to 20.1304? You keep saying that a veteran can get a second hearing before the board under that reg, and I think you're talking about subsection B. And if you could just show me where it says that.
Sure, Your Honor. Okay, subsection B, subsequent request.
Yeah, what does subsequent mean? I mean, my interpretation of subsequent has always been that A, subsection A, says that you need to request a hearing within 90 days of the certification to the board, and that B refers to subsequent requests, that is, after the 90-day period.
I think that's a fair reading, Your Honor.
But you're interpreting this reg to say that anyone could get a second hearing at the board if they show good cause under 20.1304B.
We think that's at the board member's discretion then, yes, Your Honor. That's the position we laid out in our supplemental memo, I believe.
So your interpretation of subsequent is, could you just tell me what it is?
Either subsequent to the 90-day period. I think subsequent to the 90-day period, at least for this case, contemplates the second request, because this request certainly fell outside of the 90-day period. So I think, as noted, that's a fair assessment. There are two kinds of requests for a hearing that are possible. You can request a hearing within the 90 days, in which, at which point subsection A would apply, and you can do it outside of the 90 days, which would go to subsection B. And similarly, subsequent, though counsel hasn't looked into it, could be interpreted as another, subsequent, the next. And if Your Honor would like
and
to
how many days
subsequent weekend.
Okay, how many days outside of the 90-day period was Mr. Cook here? Several years?
Yeah, several years, Your Honor.
Okay. I want to make sure we're on the same page.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. Several years. 2007, I think, was the substantive appeal. So this was the most recent request was 7 years later. Thank you very much. And with that, the Secretary.
In our Bryant case, we appeared to hold, I just want to see if you agree with me on this, that 3.103C, and particularly the sentence of 3.103C that, let me just read it here. The part that says that during a hearing, it is the responsibility of VA employee or employees conducting a hearing to fully explain issues and suggest the submission of evidence that the claimant may have overlooked and that may advantage the claimant. That sentence of 3.103C2 applies to the board. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor. And Brian, the court did say 3.103C2 applies to the board.
Okay. And in your briefs, I think it was in a footnote, you specifically said that it might have been in your supplemental memo. You specifically said that 3.103C, Bryant just held that sentence applies to the board, or you indicated that it might, or something like that. But that the rest of 3.103, particularly the part that says, the part in C1 that says that the right to a hearing, at any time you can have a hearing upon request, that would not apply to the board. Can you explain how you would justify such a different interpretation of 3.103? That one sentence would apply to the board and to board hearings, and that another sentence in 3.103C would not apply?
Sure, Your Honor. The court limited its holding in Bryant to that 3.103C2 portion, and then noted in its footnotes 1 and 2, the procedures for obtaining a hearing before the board are located at 20.1304. So even Bryant referred back to that regulation instead of 3.103C1 in terms of how you get a hearing before the board. Then the footnote 2 noted that the right to a hearing was found in 7107, or right to a hearing before the board was found in 7107. And I believe the decision said D, though it technically I think is B. So Bryant in that case was limited. And if you look at 3.103 generally, that regulation, it's not in the part of the regulations that relates to board hearings. It's in the part that relates to hearings at the RO or RO process. And if you look further down in the regulation, it talks about having a hearing at the VA regional office or other VA facilities that aren't the board, and how they have different resources and things. So that's how we arrived at that interpretation. But even if the court were to think that 3.103C1 would apply to the board, which it doesn't, or which we don't believe it does, it acts as a waypost. So if you enter into everything into 3.103C1, 3.103C1 immediately directs you to 20.1304 because it refers to that and says those are the provisions that you look at for board hearings. So I think regardless of whether it applies, the end result is the same. The court's funneled into 20.1304, and we get into the good cause motion issue, which we've already discussed, Your Honor.
Going back to Judge Bartley's line of questioning with respect to 20.1304B. You're saying that because the provenance of this case boils down to one appeal, he had, despite the fact that it's been before a board three times, it's one appeal and he's entitled to one hearing. And any subsequent requests for hearing would have to be looked at under the good cause per subsection B.
That's correct, Your Honor, or any of the other exceptions like 20.717. But again, I think good cause is probably the one that would be most applicable here. Thank you very much.
Wait a second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, the Secretary urges the court to affirm the board's decision.
Mr. Carpenter, it seems that you might be able to address at least one of the supplemental authorities that you see.
Thank you, Your Honor. I always hesitate to try to describe the government's argument, but I'm going to tread on that ground. If I understand the government's argument, it is that this case is about whether there are limited opportunities for a hearing or unlimited opportunities for a hearing. And they premise that on whether A, as used in both the statute and the regulation, refers to singular or multiple hearings. And then they layer on to that that there is something called conditional determinations, which is the show cause argument that the government just spoke at length about. It seems to me that the government can't get to any of its, if you forgive the use of the term, downstream arguments about limited or unlimited or conditional or discretionary for good cause, because they have not established any reason for this court to believe that the Article A, as used in the statute or the regulation, means singular. They acknowledged that the Federal Circuit said that A can be understood to be either, and it should be understood in the context in which it is written. And the context that they offer is not the statute, not the regulation at issue in this case, 20.700A, but 1304. With all due respect to the government, their reliance upon 1304 is simply misplaced. 1304 was written based upon an assumption that there was only one appeal. Or, to put it another way, that the only time you can be afforded a second hearing, based upon the government's announced interpretation in oral argument, that you get that hearing only based upon a showing of good cause. This case presents the question of law as to whether or not, once this court vacates a decision, either upon order or upon the terms of a joint remand, does that change the landscape? Does that implicate 1304? And the government's not offered a single reason as to why 1304 is implicated other than they think so. And of course it advantages their position. But because it advances their position is not a basis for statutory or regulatory interpretation. There is no showing that has been made by the government as to why this court should read, in context of either the statute or the regulation, Article A to be singular. Why would Congress write a statute that would limit the veteran's opportunity for a hearing when Congress has made clear that this is supposed to be a non-adversarial system in which every opportunity should be afforded the veteran the opportunity to be heard? This is only about the opportunity to be heard. Now, in the opening briefs, it was presented as a constitutional issue. I believe that it is clearly embodied in both the statute and the regulation. The statute talks in terms of the board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for a hearing. Well, certainly there's only one hearing afforded at a time. However, the question is this a bifurcated process once this court vitiates the finality of that board decision? And the answer to that must be in the affirmative.
Why isn't the, I understand what you're saying about right and so forth. And so in this case, Mr. Cook has had a hearing. And has had one hearing.
Correct.
So the VA regulation, as the VA would interpret it, says you can have another hearing. You just got to tell us why you need yet another hearing. So why isn't that enough? Why doesn't that satisfy the individual's, as you would put it, right to a hearing?
Because it does not, it evades the question as to whether or not this is a clean slate. Whether or not
it doesn't. It just says you can have a hearing, and but you just got to tell us why it's important for you to have a hearing once you've already had one on the same claim.
But with respect, Your Honor, there is nothing about the use of the Article A that suggests that.
Okay. I'm not going to talk about Article A. I understand that.
Okay.
But your premise was that if this court vacates a prior board decision, then that wipes the slate clean.
Relative to a hearing. Relative
to a hearing. But we still have one claim.
Yes.
Still same claim. And the individual has had a hearing on that claim so that Mr. Cook has had the opportunity to be heard, and if he wants to be heard the second time, why is it not reasonable to say, hey, we'll give you a second hearing, just let us know why?
Because his first hearing was more than 2 years earlier, and much changed.
But why didn't he have to say, hey, a lot's changed?
Because only 1304 imposes that on the way up the first time. There is nothing in 1304 that says that it applies when the case comes back, either to the board following remand or from this court following remand. And therefore, the VA is reading into the relevant statute and regulation here conditions that do not exist in either. Yes, they exist in 1304, but they exist based upon an assumption that this will only apply in that 90-day window after certification. And the government reads into this that that therefore applies to every opportunity for a hearing thereafter. There is nothing to support that interpretation. They are relying upon the word subsequent as not referring to the 90 days in the preceding paragraph, but they're going outside of that and saying that it applies at any time and affords the opportunity for multiple hearings. I think more correct reading of 1304 is that it has a limited application for the first time that the appeal is certified, and that this regulation does not address what happens thereafter. It only addresses one circumstance. And to read this regulation otherwise so as to limit the right is to go beyond asking for deference, because what you're looking at in deference is not what they said in 1304, but what they said in 2700 parens A. Unless, Judge Bartley, you would like for me to comment about 1507, I don't believe I've had any statements to make about that. I believe that it was covered in your questioning, at least to my satisfaction, that that was the point, that it creates an exception in that condition in the B1 language.
So all your contention is that all remands to the board would be entitled, the appellant would be entitled to a hearing.
Under the interpretation of the regulation at issue here, what I'm trying to clarify is that 1304, which the government relies upon, only speaks to what happens when it is certified for the first time. It does not mention anything after that. It uses the word subsequent, and you have to determine what subsequent refers to. Does it refer to following the 90 days, and then is that 90 days limited to, or excuse me, unlimited to several years? So the government has now shifted from limited to unlimited, that they wanted unlimited for preclusion purposes. But this case is about 2700A, and whether 2700A has a preclusionary provision. And 2700A has no such language. It simply says a right to a hearing upon request. What it tells the veteran or the veteran's representative is that the only precondition is that you must appear in person. That's all that is articulated in that as a conditional prerequisite, not a showing of good cause. Now, is it unreasonable for them to show good cause? And if the regulation had said that, it's an entirely different story.
So what is your interpretation of the subsequent?
That it only refers to the 90 days for the first appeal. And that if
And in your case, the first appeal having been in October of 2012?
Correct. And he had that hearing. And then any subsequent hearing after that, in my view, is not covered by the terms of 1304B.
Okay, and so going back to the question, is it your opinion or your position that an appeal to this court that ends up in a remand to the board is entitled, the appellant is entitled to a hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
Unconditional. Okay.
Only one?
I don't know that I'm prepared to go beyond one.
Well, think of the in your pocket.
Yes, yes, I understand that. But with all due respect, Your Honor, I'm not prepared to go down that road. That presupposes an agenda, and it's not an agenda that I can accept as an attorney or as an advocate for veterans who is representing the veteran and the veteran's interests. That to have such an agenda to try to manipulate or game the system in that fashion, particularly when you have a system that is supposed to be looking at these circumstances in the light most favorable to the veteran.
So to get back to a question that I had asked Secretary's counsel, is it the veteran's position that 7107 and 20.700 using the article is unambiguous?
That it is plain on its face, yes, and that it affords a hearing at any time upon request. Okay. Unless there's further questions from the court, I'll...
So you're contending it's the article A.
Yeah.
Where really you're saying it's per appeal, and
yes.
your argument centers on the context of what the appeal is.
Correct. Well, the stage of the appeal. To me, I think we, in these circumstances, need to change the language away from appeal or a claim, because I absolutely agree with what Chief Judge Hagel said, that there's only one appeal, there's only one claim. But there are separate stages, and the stage that is covered by 1304 only covers the very first time that the case is certified. That's what is being referred to. That's where the 90 days operates from. And beyond that, if there is another stage, a remand back to the agency and then a return to the board, I do not believe that 1304 creates a limitation and that under the correct reading of both the statute and the regulation, that that Article A should permit the right to a hearing. Excuse me, doesn't permit. Guarantees the right to a hearing.
It does guarantee.
It says right, Your Honor, and I don't know how else that can be interpreted. Where we seem to have gone off the rails here is whether or not the Article A is plural or singular, meaning afforded more than one opportunity for a hearing. And to me, the plain language of both the statute and the regulation refer back to the conditions, which are that there has been a request and that there is a new decision to be made. When that original appeal comes up and the board remands it back to the agency of original jurisdiction, that remand decision is not a final decision. It's not a disposition of the appeal. The decision on the appeal, there should be another opportunity under the reading of both the statute and the regulation without the burden of having to show good cause. Thank you, Your Honor. This is for the questions.
Yes, I do have. Thank you. Thank you. What is your response to the Secretary's numbers about the large numbers of hearings they already have scheduled at the 71,000? If your interpretation is that you have to describe the stage of this.
My response to that is twofold. First, they need to talk to Congress. Congress is the one that wrote the statute. Or they need to talk to a separate division that writes regulations and write a regulation a la 1507 that deals with these separate stages. 1304 does not fit that bill. Then we can argue about whether or not that is or isn't consistent with the statute. But not in the context in which we are here today. There was a request for a hearing, indisputed that the board denied that hearing. Is there or isn't there a statutory and regulatory right to that hearing? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted. The court will greet counsel.
All rise. What is now recent?